Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 6. Brahma satisfies Lord Shiva. Text 45. Tvam karmana mangala mangalanam. Katu salokam tanushe saparamba. Amangalanam chatta misram ubanam. Vipayaya kena tadeva kasyachit. Tangkarmanam mangala mangalanam. Katu salokam tanushe saparamba. Amangalanam chatta misram ubanam. Viparyaya kena tadeva kasyachit. Tankarmanam mangala mangalanam. Katu salokam tanushe saparamba. Amangalanam chatta misram ubanam. Viparyaya kena tadeva kasyachit. Translation. O most auspicious Lord, you have ordained the heavenly planets, the spiritual Vaikuntha planets, and the impersonal Brahman sphere as the respective destinations of the performers of auspicious activities. Similarly, for others who are miscreants, you have destined different kinds of hells, which are horrible and ghastly. Yet sometimes it is found that their destinations are just the opposite. It is very difficult to ascertain the cause of this. Purport. The Supreme Personality of God, it is called the Supreme Will. It is by the Supreme Will that everything is happening. It is said, therefore, that not a blade of grass moves without the Supreme Will. Generally, it is prescribed that performers of pious activities are promoted to the higher planetary systems, devotees are promoted to the Vaikunthas, or spiritual worlds, and impersonal speculators are promoted to the impersonal Brahman effulgence. But it sometimes happens that a miscreant like Ajamil is immediately promoted to the Vaikuntha Lok simply by chanting the name of Narayan. Although, when Ajamil uttered this vibration, he intended to call his son Narayan, Lord Narayan took it seriously and immediately gave him promotion to Vaikuntha Lok, despite his background, which was full of sinful activities. Similarly, King Daksha was always engaged in the pious activities of performing sacrifices. Yet simply because of creating a little misunderstanding with Lord Shiva, he was severely taken to task. The conclusion is, therefore, that the Supreme Will is the ultimate judgment. No one can argue upon this. A pure devotee, therefore, submits in all circumstances to the Supreme Will of the Lord, accepting it as all auspicious. Tate nukampang susamikshamano bunjane vatmakatam vipakam hitvad vipuabhir vidadan namaste jiveta yo mukti pade sadayapak. The purport of this verse is that when a devotee is in a calamitous condition, he takes it as a benediction of the Supreme Lord. and takes responsibility himself for his past misdeeds. In such a condition, he offers still more devotional service and is not disturbed. One who lives in such a disposition of mind, engaged in devotional service, is the most eligible candidate for promotion to the spiritual world. In other words, such a devotee's claim for promotion to the spiritual world is assured in all circumstances. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Ajnanjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militan Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunitananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Here you are getting precise instructions how to go back home, back to Godhead. We are not told that this world will become free of calamities. We have no hope for world peace. We have no hope for world prosperity. We have no hope for world law and order, world stability. Why? These things appear like flashes in the sky, and then they disappear. Bhutva bhutva praliyate, coming and going, ups and downs, booms and busts, creations, annihilations, coming together, breaking apart. This is the nature of the material world. As devotees, we don't have rosy vision of how life in this world is. At the same time, the devotee is generating another reality, not only for himself or herself, but also for the whole world. In other words, who can properly understand the magnitude of a devotee's activities? By material calculation, it's not possible to understand the effect of the service of even a beginning devotee on the world's development. Yet foolish people place their hopes in talks of world peace, world economic development, world this, world that. And meanwhile, all that's going on is the same old lust, anger, greed, madness, envy, and illusion. Still, people expect the best in life for themselves. Why not? Why shouldn't I expect the best for me? I'm a good person. All my friends, my family members, they tell me I'm a good person. Why shouldn't the whole world be at my beck and call for maximum enjoyment and pleasure? Why not? And when the world shows its usual face, then people become very angry. How could this be my result? This is the reverse of what I expected. This is not right. I'm a nice person. I'm a pious person. I'm a spiritual person. And just look what's going on. Who can understand this? It doesn't make sense. And you dare to tell me there's a God when nothing that's happening makes any sense to me? And you claim there's a God? In this way, people become very exasperated. We were speaking last night at Snanyatra's house about the reactions of the Londoners to the bombings. We were trying to impart to the devotees a feeling for what it's like to maintain material aspirations, material hopes, and then have those hopes crushed to powder right before your eyes. It's a very instructive situation when you try to put yourself in the place of people who have gone through the normal processes of material existence, which are creation and annihilation. We just don't hear of their outcome in an external way. We try to understand the inner hopes, the inner desires, and how these inner hopes and desires are frustrated. Then you can properly perceive the reality of material existence. Then you can understand why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Dukkhalyam Shashvatam, this material is a temporary and miserable place. Otherwise, you might be thinking, it's not that bad. Here in Southern California, things are pretty tranquil. It's been a bit too hot, but still, you know, life goes on. I was explaining last night that if only you had spent the last 2 weeks in Las Vegas, you would have experienced 110 degrees every day. Yesterday, the temperature went down to 100, and everyone was so thankful. Praise the Lord, 100 degrees, relief. So, we, speaking materially, have a desire that let's just go on in life. Even though there may be some miseries, we'll tolerate, and then the good things will come to us. So, with this mentality, people are very shocked when material nature shows its usual face. Srila Prabhupada explained about Durga Devi, the personified material energy, how kind she is. She says, "My dear child, lay your sleepy head on my lap and go to sleep peacefully." And as soon as the child doze off, what does Durga Devi do? Cuts your head off. So we might think, oh, these stories, these Hindu stories are just to create fear of God in us. Well, as the Bible says, it is true that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. We agree. But it is not the end of wisdom. Yes, if nothing else, you should fear God, especially when you see the power of material nature crush your hopes to powder. But better, you develop love of God. But that requires some practical understanding of material and spiritual existence and the execution of techniques for spiritual purification. Otherwise, there's no point in talking about love of God. There's not even any point in talking about spiritual. People today don't like the word religion. As soon as you say religion, they think, oh, what is this? Al-Qaeda? Religion. Religion has caused so much suffering and war in this world. And if you say spirituality, then everyone can click on that. Oh, yes, spiritual. I mean, everyone's spiritual. In their own way, of course. Whatever you do, sports playing is spiritual, your girlfriend is spiritual. Spirituality is just everywhere. And you deal with it in your own way, of course. Why would you want to follow religion, which is a dogmatic, authoritarian system enforced upon you by those with ulterior motivations? This is the mindset today. That kind of mindset has no answer for why material nature doesn't give you the destination you expect. Just put yourself in the shoes of the persons getting on the metro in London. The newspapers describe the before and the after. Those kind of things I like to read just to see the realities of material life and the human nature side of things. A mother and her daughter living together happily, and every morning the mother walks her 20-year-old daughter to the metro. The daughter's going to work, and they talk, and then they, as the daughter is going through the subway hallway, she turns every few steps and waves back at the mother, and the mother waves at her. Every day they were doing this for years. Morning ritual, walking each other to the subway. Okay, see you this evening, see you this evening. Waving again and again and again. But this time, the daughter wasn't coming back. The question is, why? How could this happen? Another example. A boy, young man, living with his girlfriend. He was so in love with her. He called her Sunshine. She is the sunshine in my life, he was describing to reporters. She was my everything. She was so full of life. He was laying in bed and she got up to go to work. And he watched her go out the door. You know, I love you, sunshine. See you when you come back in the evening. Why not? Why not love? Why not have a sunshine of your own? And sure, when she comes back in the evening, then the nighttime is the right time, as they say in Kali Yuga. What's wrong with this? But she didn't come back. So this young man was just lamenting. Oh, why? Who could have taken my sunshine? Why? Another example. We were explaining last night. A guy in the neighborhood in his 20s. Everyone in the whole neighborhood said, if there was a vote, who was Mr. Cool? It was this guy. He could talk with anyone. He could socialize with anyone. He was the life of the party. When he would just walk from his house to the subway station, it would take him an hour because everyone in the whole street would want to talk to him. And he was able to talk back with them and just, you know, schmooze and have a good time like that. He didn't come back. So, this is the nature of material existence. The hope beats strong in our breast that, oh, I will be fulfilled. I'll be gratified. There'll be some kind of peace for me. There'll be some inner discovery for me. And the hopes are not fulfilled. We were explaining last night, if you can recognize this aspect of material nature, you'll save yourself so many problems. That's why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Asha Pasha Shatar Bhada, bound by a network of false hopes, Moha Jala Samavrata, covered by a network of illusion. And then you suffer. Now, it seems like your destination is going to be something else. Just like more than one or two persons, when they were in the London metro system, they weren't on the trains, the two trains that blew up, three trains that blew up. They were safe. And when the word was spread to evacuate the subway system, unharmed, they came out from the underground onto the streets. They were not anywhere near where the explosions were. You know, London has a huge subway system. So immediately, in at least two cases, these persons called their work and said, I'm all right, don't worry. I'll be there, you know, shortly. We had something strange happen in the subway system. Maybe there was some train breakdown. They didn't really know. But we'll be there at work very soon. Now, these two persons, didn't know each other. But in any case, they boarded the one out of thousands of buses in London that were going to blow up. The one out of thousands. Those of you from New York, you know what a huge mass transit system is like. And you're going to board, after calling your work and saying, I'm okay, don't worry, you're going to board the one bus out of thousands. And two people did that. This is material nature. So then, an ordinary person wonders, what's going on? This is not right. And how can there be some kind of personal God in charge of all this? It's very difficult to understand the point of all this. Actually, the Bhagavatam agrees. It is very difficult to understand the point of all this unless you have Bhagavat knowledge, unless you have the guidance of a Bhagavat devotee. It is very difficult. Lord Brahma himself is saying that in this verse here. Yet, sometimes it is found that their destinations are just the opposite. It is very difficult to ascertain the cause of this. This is Lord Brahma himself speaking. And Prabhupada in the purport brings things right to the point. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is called the Supreme Will. It is by the Supreme Will that everything is happening. That means behind the whole system is a person, the Supreme Person. Maya jakshena prakriti suyache satyaratram. Material nature is a system that is run by a person. Unless you understand the person, you can't understand the system. But the approach of contemporary people is let's try to understand the system with our limited senses and forget all about the existence of any person behind the system. Now, even if you want to do that, you'll fail because you can't even understand the system with your imperfect tiny senses. What to speak of understand the person behind the system? So the whole effort is doomed to fail. Just forget about Krishna, okay? And try to understand the system. You can't. And then try to understand the person behind the system with your ordinary senses. You can't. So in this way, because people become frustrated in their attempts, then they decide it's not worth it trying to figure these things out. Or they say that same thing in a different way. Whatever happens is all the same thing. It's all the one. Just go with it, and it goes with you as the universe evolves toward perfection. That's just a different way of saying, I can't figure this out. I don't know what's going on. But you can't go to a party or a cocktail club and say, like, I don't know what's going on. So instead you say, whatever, it's just all the, you know, it's just all the learning experience. It's just all the one consciousness manifesting in different ways. And then everyone says, ooh, yeah, you're really spiritual. And then you meet a girl and take her back to your apartment, and you know, life goes on the same, whether you're spiritual or not. This is life today. Now, we agree, as we said, and Lord Brahma is saying, it's very difficult to understand what's behind the system. Because sometimes it appears that the system acts in an opposite way. So in the purport, you get some prominent examples. Ajamil, what is he doing going to Vaikuntha Loka? Sinful. Married to a prostitute. Engaging in crimes to support his lust life with a prostitute. He went back to Godhead. Then Daksha, a Prajapati, a son of Brahma, a master of fruitive activities, punya, good karma, a master of yajñas. Yet, he had a bit of a problem with Lord Shiva, and he had a severe reaction. So there's enough example. Lord Brahma himself wondered about Bhakti, the sister of Bakasura, a terrible family, Putana, Agasura, and Bakasura. Lord Brahma, after his bewilderment in the Brahma Vimohana Leela, he said, he prayed to Krishna, I'm wondering what's going on. I know that you are the embodiment of all reward and benediction. There's nothing more to be had than you. At the same time, I've seen you've given yourself completely to Putana and her family. What is going to be left of you to give to the Brijbasis? You've given it all to Putana, Bakasura, Agasura. What about the Brijbasis who they've dedicated life and soul to you? So Brahma himself said, this is bewildering. Uddhava himself expressed amazement. Ahoyam bhakti stanakalakutam. How did Putana, Bhakti, the sister of Bakasura, how did she get a position in Goloka Vrindavan as good as Krishna's mother? She got that same rasa, that same parental taste as Yashoda Mai? What's going on? So the devotees are also wondering. But the wondering of the devotees is a stimulation for ecstatic love. Whereas the wondering of the non-devotees is a stimulation for more frustration. A stimulation for more ignorance. And eventually, they just take shelter of intoxication and illicit sex as the solution for everything. When in doubt, become intoxicated. When in doubt, have illicit sex. When not in doubt, have intoxication. When not in doubt, have illicit sex. This is life. As it is, the normal world that your friends and relatives are beckoning you back to. Be for real. Come back to the real world. Be practical. That's all that happens. So we admit it is very difficult to understand Krishna's dealings without the guidance of the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavat devotee. Just take the case of Chitraketu. Now, Chitraketu talked to Lord Sankarsan. He had the personal darshan of Lord Sankarsan. He was given his own aircraft by the Supreme Lord to travel around the universe. So what was he doing? In a company of beautiful Vijayadara women, he would travel throughout the universe in this aircraft, glorifying the Lord. Demonstrating he's no ordinary soul. He's glorifying Krishna. So then, while Chitraketu is touring, he goes past a place where he sees Lord Shiva and Parvati, Durga Devi, in an assembly of great sages, advanced mystics, charanas, siddhas, advanced entities from other planets. Okay, fair enough. But Chitraketu notices, what is this? In the public assembly, Lord Shiva's wife, Parvati, is sitting on his lap and he's embracing her in public? Very strange. Of course, in the contemporary context, sometimes people have a hard time understanding this. Like, what's the big deal, you know? The man's embracing his wife, you know, at least he's married to her, you know. They're in public, so what? What does it matter, private or public? Often when you're traveling in the city, especially Sankirtan devotees know, you see just men and women just embracing, carrying on, kissing in a public place in the street, as if doing it in public adds a special flavor. That's the mentality they have. We're just shamelessly carrying on like this in the middle of the street, in the middle of the airport, and there's some special excitement imparted to the whole activity that's not there when you're doing these things in private. That is the contemporary understanding. But in Vedic culture, such public displays are never done. So, therefore, Chitraketu was totally astonished. What's going on here? Why is Lord Shiva embracing his wife? She's sitting on his lap in public. In fact, they're in an assembly of great saints, sages, and rishis. So he said this in ear range of Parvati, which apparently was a big mistake. Lord Shiva just smiled, remained silent. And the saints and sadhus in the assembly, they also remained silent, following in Lord Shiva's footsteps. But Parvati couldn't take it. She immediately retaliated. Who is this person to dare speak like that? What does he think he is? The Dandadara, the carrier of punishment? Why is it that great sages, including Brahma, Narada, they haven't said anything about Lord Shiva's behavior? And this Chitraketu suddenly thinks he's the enforcer of Dharma, and he's going to say something when Brahma and such great celestial demigods haven't said anything? What's going on? How dare him speak like this? And then she accused, he's puffed up. He thinks he's a great devotee. He's proud of his association with Lord Sankarsan. Therefore, to bring him down to his right consciousness, I'm going to curse him. Let him take birth as a demon. Now, what's going on here? It's actually a very intricate situation. And it's looked at from different aspects by the acharyas. First of all, it's not that Chitraketu was being offensive when he made that comment. What is the loka guru, the spiritual master of everyone, Lord Shiva? What's he doing acting like this? It was not with a tone of condemnation, as Daksha did earlier in the fourth canto. Daksha considered Shiva just like insignificant, a useless insignificant thing. Lives in crematoriums, smears his body with ashes. has no possessions, doesn't even give my daughter a house that he married. But Chittaketu didn't have that kind of mentality. He was speaking in wonder. He had no doubts about Lord Shiva's position. I know he's the local guru. I know of his great stature. But why is he acting like this? It was out of wonder. Furthermore, the acharyas explained that Chittaketu was worried about the standard. Okay, I know Lord Shiva is impeccable. He's never touched by any material contamination. But what will the common man think seeing Lord Shiva act this way? The common man will think, I can also do that. So not only that, but also the common man will make offense and start to criticize Lord Shiva. Besides imitating him, the common man will criticize, and that'll be offensive. So I'm worried about that. Even though I know Lord Shiva is so great. So that was Chittaketu's thinking. And what about Lord Shiva himself? He was smiling. He was silent. He didn't take offense at all. He understood Chittaketu's mentality. Furthermore, the acharyas point out, Lord Shiva was thinking, what are you doing criticizing me? You're up in that airplane with all those heavily clad girls. What do you want my case? You know, I got my wife sitting on my lap. Look at you. So in this way, actually, Lord Shiva and Chittaketu were just having some joking exchange. And later, Lord Shiva would explain that to his wife, that we're devotees of the Supreme Lord. You're like, we're mates, we're brothers. He's actually, Lord Shiva will say, Chittaketu's on the same platform as me. Yet we're just exchanging some joking words. Why did you curse him? Looked at from another point of view, however, as Prabhupada explains, Chittaketu had become a little puffed up, even though he was a great devotee. He was thinking, it's me and Lord Sankarshan, I've really arrived. And so that tinge of pride was something that had to be dealt with. So all these things are going on at the same time. It's not a black and white situation. Nothing is really black and white. And the Bhagavatam will teach you to see that. Otherwise you become bewildered. What is this? Chittaketu, a great devotee. He just had a personal darshan with Lord Sankarshan. He was given an airplane by the Supreme Lord himself. And now he's cursed to be a demon? Well, I don't know. If this is bhakti yoga, I'm going to think twice. If this is the result you get from serving Krishna, better be a bit careful how close you come to Krishna. Now, underneath it all is the desire of the Supreme Lord, the personal will of the Supreme Lord. What did Krishna want? That is the point. Srila Prabhupada explains how the acharyas, especially Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, point out Krishna's personal will and desire was that Chittaketu hurry up and go back to Godhead. Now you might say, well, fine, but why curse him? Why does he have to take birth as a demon? Yeah. But going back to Godhead, is there any comparison to that? So, Krishna, acting through Parvati, caused her to curse him so that Chittaketu would hurry up and go back to Godhead after just a short birth as a demon, rather than spending hundreds of thousands of years in the heavenly planets roaming around. Krishna wanted him back to Godhead right away. This is Krishna's love. Now, we might say, well, this is pretty tough love. I mean, why not let Chittaketu enjoy with the heavenly planet girls in the heavenly planets for millions of years, and then go back to Godhead? That's a good God who would, yeah. If God is really God, he would allow for that. Maximum material enjoyment and God realization and love of God all together. It's not Krishna's program. And we got to attune ourselves to that reality. What does the Lord explain in Chaitanya Charitamrita? Lord Chaitanya is explaining Krishna's modus operandi. He says, speaking as Krishna, whenever I see a devotee who wants to serve me with material desires, I'm not so unintelligent. I will fulfill that devotee's desires, material desires, in such a way that the devotee will never ask me for that thing again. In other words, I'll take the situation and transform it. That's Krishna's program. How to give you the ecstatic salary of pure love of God as soon as possible. That's why the Shastra says the Lord is more eager for us to go back to Godhead than we are. The real wealth in life is the raga, the attachment for Krishna. No material favorable or unfavorable circumstances can compare to that. So this is what the Lord wanted from Chitraketu. I want my devotee back to Godhead as soon as possible. So let there be this external thing of the curse by Parvati. And you know what Chitraketu's reaction was when he heard the curse. He gracefully descended from his airplane, came before Parvati, offered her pranams, and said, "That's all right. I don't mind. Mother." Parvati is thinking, don't think that just because you're a devotee, I can't curse you. I'm the mother of all living entities. I'm Durga Devi. Therefore, take the curse. And Chitraketu said, "Mother, it's all right. I won't argue against your curse." Actually, Chitraketu knew that he hadn't said anything really wrong. So he accepted it. He explained that, what is a curse? What is a blessing, a benediction? What is happiness? What is distress? All these things are just constantly changing material phantasmagoria. For the devotee of the Lord, these things are not very important. And with that, Chitraketu left in his airplane to accept his fate as becoming a demon, Vritrasura. Then what did Lord Shiva do? He turned to his wife and said, "You know, you're very beautiful. Everyone knows that. But I think in this case, this devotee of the Lord has surpassed your greatness and beauty because he just accepted in a tranquil way your curse. In this way, he's shown himself to be better than you." This is Lord Shiva's way of indirectly telling his wife, "Don't curse another Vaishnava again, please." Lord Shiva, he's very tactful in his home life. He's an expert grihastha. Basically, he was telling his wife, "Don't do it again." But instead, he surpassed you in your greatness, in your beauty. In other words, you are beautiful, but he went even further than you. So in this way, what is a very mysterious circumstance, this Chitraketu situation, it looks like he got the opposite result of what he should get. He became a demon when he's a great devotee of the Lord. But with guidance, you can see what's going on. You can see that Krishna is completely fair. Krishna is equal to all living entities. What's another mysterious case? Well, a last example. What about Kubja? This is a tough one for your material senses. Krishna's lila with Kubja looks like something we may be very familiar with. It looks like rajogun activity, the mode of passion activity. Not at all, though. Krishna promised Kubja, "I will go to your house." You know, she was a hunchback lady. She had a beautiful face, but she was hunchback, and therefore her body was ugly. She was bringing sandalwood pulp for King Kamsa. And what did Krishna do? He and Balaram were roaming throughout Mathura, doing whatever they liked. And so Krishna said, "Hey, beautiful, fine woman." The Lord can be a bit fresh when he wants to. You know, hunchback lady, you know, that sounds like a cruel remark. "Hey, beautiful, fine woman, bring the sandalwood pulp to me." This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's the source of everything. Yet, he, as his pastime, is asking for something. "Better you give me the sandalwood pulp than give it to the king." So Kubja did that. She smeared the sandalwood pulp over Krishna and Balaram's bodies, producing a beautiful contrasting effect, the color of the sandalwood pulp with Krishna's bluish complexion, Balaram's whitish complexion. And then, you know how Krishna rewarded her. He took his feet and put them on top of her feet. He pressed his fingers under her jawbones, and pressing down on her feet and up on her cheeks, he straightened her out completely. And by his touch, she turned into a beautiful woman. Now, naturally, she wanted to reciprocate. She's moving her eyebrows and just flirting and, why don't you come to my house sometime? And this is going on in the middle of the street, in the middle of the boulevard in Mathura. So it was a little embarrassing for Krishna. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura says that Krishna was even telling her, you're inviting me to your house. What exactly are you implying? Is it for dinner? And Kub just said, I don't think so. Then Krishna pointed out to her, don't you think it's a bit strange that you're carrying on like this in the middle of the street in Mathura? And Kub just said, don't blame me. It's your fault. You touched me first. You agitated me. So this looks like something that is very familiar in Kali Yuga, but actually it has nothing to do with that. First of all, Krishna indicates his detachment. He compliments her on her agitated state, but he's looking at Balaram and the cowherd boys while he speaks. He says, certainly you are a suitable girlfriend for relieving the anxieties of traveling young men like us. He gave credit where credit is due. I'll certainly come to your house, but later. And this way, Krishna and the cowherd boys left. In this instance, Krishna is showing his supreme opulence of renunciation. But later, after Uddhava returned from Vrindavan and gave the full report about the bridge buses, Krishna decided to go on a mission of obviously pleasing his devotees. Even when Uddhava presented the reports of Vrindavan, how the devotees were suffering in separation, Krishna was confident, Uddhava has satisfied them by giving the message I wrote. And also, very mysteriously, Krishna went to Vrindavan in his bhava expansion, and Uddhava could see that. So Uddhava was satisfied. The Lord understands. So then, Krishna took Uddhava, and they went to Kubja's house. She was obviously very happy to see him. At that time, she was a society girl. She was beautiful. She was sociable. And by the touch of Krishna's hand, she had become transformed from a hunchback into a society woman. And so she was using her natural assets as her profession. So when Krishna and Uddhava got to her house, they saw the whole place was decked out for one purpose and one purpose only. Looks all very familiar to us. An agitating atmosphere, aphrodisiacs, incense, lusty pictures on the walls, beautiful couches, canopies everywhere, beautiful perfume scents in the air. Kubja knew exactly what to do. But was Krishna there for that purpose? No. What does Krishna need with a society girl? Lakshmi Sahasrasapta Sambrama Savyamanam Govindam Adipurusham Tambaham Vajami. Krishna has unlimited Lakshmis, goddesses of fortunes in the spiritual world. He didn't go to Kubja for sense gratification. The fact is, she had already satisfied him just by offering the sandalwood pulp. So we must get that out of our mind, that Krishna went to Kubja's house to satisfy himself. Now it is a fact. She wanted to use the Lord for satisfying her senses, but that was not Krishna's motivation. He was not interested in using her for his gratification. He already has everything. He was interested in transforming her, turning her into a pure devotee, changing her lust into pure bhakti. And he could do that because she was already free from sinful reactions by her offering the sandalwood pulp to him. So now it was time to go to a higher level. She'd already become free of her past sinful activity. That's on one level. On another level, she's an expansion of Satyabhama. She's a Bhushakti. But we're taught this Leela on two levels. So we can look at it that she had no other asset except that she offered Krishna sandalwood pulp. She had no pious activities. And just by that offering, because the Lord accepted, she was spiritually elevated. But still, she wanted to use Krishna to satisfy her senses. And Krishna wanted to fix that. She was desiring Krishna, but for her own motivation. So Krishna wanted to bring it to a higher standard. So he came to her house. She offered him a seat. She offered Uddhava a seat also, as high as Krishna's. But Uddhava just touched the seat with his hand and touched his head, indicating, I accept, but I can't sit on the same level as Krishna. And then what did Krishna do? He went straight for the inner chambers and lay on an opulent bed. Now immediately our mind goes, wow, this all looks familiar. This all looks like something we all know about. It isn't. You have to see the situation through the eyes of the Shastra. You have to be guided in hearing about Krishna by the Guru. So Krishna's laying on the bed, and she's taking a bath, pouring on the perfume, the scented oils, dressing herself opulently, the finest jewelry, and then she comes into the room where Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is. And she's very shy, very bashful, because although she was a beautiful woman, she had no experience. She had been a hunchback before, so therefore no men wanted her. So now Krishna was to be the first, she thought, according to her perception. So what did Krishna do while she's being shy and fluttering her eyelids and being a bit bashful? He just grabs her bejeweled arm with all the bangles on, pulls her to him, and what? Just by her smelling the fragrance of his lotus feet, she lost all her material desires. That is God. And then she embraced him to her chest. He's the Anandamurti, the Bhagavatam says. He's the personification of bliss. She embraced him to her chest, and all her material desires went away. Now, who can do that here? You don't have anyone here who could do like that. Therefore, please understand, you're hearing about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just by smelling the fragrance of his lotus feet, she lost her material desire. She became cleansed of lust. This is not the outcome you expected. But this is the outcome when Krishna is directly involved. So, we cannot understand what is anyone's destination, what are the results of activities, unless we understand Krishna. Because the whole system, the whole cosmic system of the material world, the whole spiritual world, depends on Krishna's desire. So a devotee simply wants to understand what is Krishna's desire. And then you can actually understand reality. Any questions? Yes. Can one do? Chitraketu was powerful enough to curse Parvati. That's how powerful he was. And Lord Shiva told her, he could have cursed you. He's as powerful as you. He's on the same level as me. But he didn't do it. He's demonstrating that, curse or not, what's the big deal? The Narayana Pada, the devotee who's exclusively absorbed in the service of Lord Narayan, is not fazed by all these things. That was the standard Chitraketu was demonstrating. So he became a demon, Vritrasura. Indra killed him. But you know that when Indra was killing him, Indra was realizing, actually, this Vritrasura demon is the victor. He's going back to Godhead. I've got to stay in the material world trying to enjoy his Indra. He goes right back to Godhead. How can we understand these things without the guidance of the Bhagavatam and the Guru? It's impossible. Thank you very much. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much.